You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. 2 hat tricks in 4 games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats?
Hodgepodge.
Yeah, there's a Modge Podge. Whole Modge Podge of rumors.
This is a transfer Modge Podge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York. You are listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com. And SiriusXM FC Channel 85. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me, David Goss, looking out the window in a new green room, a different green room, one with better scenery here out in the Octagon, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle. And we're bringing you the show a little bit earlier because the vagaries of CONCACAF scheduling meant that U.S. and Trinidad and Tobago would go down on Thursday night. You can watch it 8 p.m. Eastern on FS1, Unimas, and UDN. This one's going to go down in Commerce City, Colorado, the site of the snow game. Boys, what's up? We're on the brink of another Hex match day. That's good stuff. Always fun.
It's exciting. I'm being serious.
That's all you got?
Well,
you don't seem that excited. Like, there's a really very detail-oriented excitement there.
Yeah. I think a year ago I wouldn't be that excited right now. So I'm excited that I'm excited. Does that make sense?
And that is because of the change in coaches, I think the attitude around the team.
I think the attitude around the team, there's been a change of culture around the team, and I don't know that that's a coincidence. But what is it? Cause doesn't mean correlation or something like that?
I'll just let you flounder there. I'm not coming in to help you here. You are just – nobody's throwing you that life raft.
Nice.
Correlation is not causality.
Yes.
Woo! Nerd. Thank you, Doyle.
Yeah. I am not excited. I am not despondent, but I think folks – tend to forget just how miserable the World Cup qualifying is every single cycle. And this game is just as big of a must-win game as the Honduras game was 2 months ago. And even though we all had a great time in the Honduras game, that's an outlier. This is going to be tough. And if we don't get the full 3 points, we are in big, big trouble. I will maybe have some fun after the game on Thursday night if the U.S. win.
But that's fun. This is fun.
You like
no,
that?
No, this is terrible.
I was going to say, you like that pit in your stomach there, Dave?
Well,
because the thing is, he's right. Doyle's right. And there has been this little bit of a shift, especially in attitude, when Bruce Arena came in. And there was some optimism that came from that. But that still doesn't change the fact that U.S. are fourth in the hex on 4 points, just one ahead of Trinidad and Tobago after 4 games. They're still in desperate times. That is a desperate situation. They must win at home. And if they don't, this whole excitement thing on your part could flip-flop quickly.
That's definitely true, but you want to watch the team you care about playing games that matter, right? And this is what qualifying does, and everyone's like, oh, we should change qualifying so the U.S. can play more competitive games against basically what people are saying is European teams, which sucks. This is what's fun. Playing Trinidad at home, maybe not the craziest one. Mexico on the road, at Honduras when you need a win, in the afternoon, in San Salvador. All of these different games, those are the ones
San Salvador.
I don't know why I just made that up.
San Pedro Sula. Yeah. There's a lot of sands, and you're confusing some of them here. Look, this is a very, very important game. We've already established that fact on previous shows. This is the game that matters most. That Azteca match on Sunday, which, just a reminder here, we have a really awesome U.S.-Mexico special that you can go download if you're interested in that. Omar Gonzalez, Hercules Gomez, Moises Munoz, Charlie Davies talking about that 0-9 goal he scored at Azteca. We've got some fan perspectives as well. I mean, this is a must-listen episode. Go check that out wherever you listen to podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, wherever that might be. Go check it out. But this game is the important game because you have to win your games at home, and that Azteca game was one that, you know what, if you get the 0-0 draw, awesome. That is icing on the cake. But the expectation is that you'll probably lose it. What's kind of the back and forth here for you, Doyle? Tactically, personnel, what are the decisions that Bruce Arena is making right now?
I think I would try to go with my strongest team against Trinidad and Tobago. And then if you decide after that, you know what, John Brooks probably can't do two altitude games in 4 days. So you sit John Brooks or Fabian Johnson or Bobby Wood, all three of whom were kind of rusty against Venezuela. If you need to sit them against Mexico and you take the L because of it, so be it. It's nice to get points against Mexico. It was wonderful to beat them down in the Aztec, even in a friendly. And obviously, if we did win, you know, at home and then win against Mexico, we're basically through. We've basically qualified. But we cannot, even at our best, we're a prohibitive underdog in that game. So what you have to do, and what David said is correct, you take care of business at home. So I would play my absolute strongest team against Trinidad and Tobago, reassess afterwards, decide who needs to be rested because somebody will. And if it means you go out in the Azteca with a B-plus squad instead of an A-plus squad, so be it. I can live with that.
I could see Doyle's face when he had that little moment where he was like, if they won both games, and then thought about what it would mean.
Like, oh, maybe if history being made. I mean, it's tantalizing, no doubt about it. It's also a little bit complicated because for the U.S. and Mexico, because of the Confederations Cup, they're pushed up 2 days from the rest of CONCACAF. The rest of CONCACAF will play on the 13th, whereas U.S. Mexico will go down on Sunday. There are some yellow card issues for the U.S. Some cautions could cause suspensions going into Aztec. I think that's another huge reason why you put your eggs in that Trinidad and Tobago basket, not just because it's home, not just because the opponent is lesser, but because you could be potentially shorthanded with your big guns when you go to Mexico. Who's in this lineup and what's the lineup look like?
Yeah, Doyle, I mean, you said you go with your strongest team.
Yeah, and
what does that mean for you right now?
Howard and goal, left to right across the back line. It's Viafania, Brooks, Cameron, and Yedlin. Bradley as a defensive midfielder, but then I want it as a kind of like a 4-3-1-2, which is what we used against Honduras. So I want Bradley as a defensive midfielder, but then I want the right-sided, nominally wide midfielder to not play wide. I want him to be tucked inside, and I want that to be Alejandro Bedoya. And I know that's going to get me a lot of hate, especially from you guys, because you love Kellen Acosta. But in this game, I want someone who is reliable, someone who has been there before, and someone who understands that he doesn't have to be a hero out there. Then on the left side, you go with either Nagby or Fabian Johnson and have them play actually wider. And then Christian Pulisic as a number 10. Up top, I would go Dempsey and Altidor. No offense to Bobby Wood, but I think Altidor is a better matchup against a Trinidad team that will probably sit deep and will need to play off of a big target forward. And that saves Wood's legs for the Azteca, where we'll be counterattacking. And his speed and ability in that situation is Charlie Davies-esque. So I it would be more of a rhombus than a diamond, but I think that's the group I would go with.
When you say it sounds like you're deciding between Wood and Altidor. You think Dempsey's the given? And that's the question?
It's Clint Dempsey in a big game. I mean, we have more than a decade worth of proof that when it really, really matters, this guy scores goals. And it really, really matters on Thursday night.
Absolutely, it does. Center back had been a little bit of a question mark. John Anthony Brooks had a thigh bruise, I believe it was, but he's been back in training, so it looks like he'll be available for Bruce Arena should he want to use him. I mentioned those possible suspensions with the next yellow card coming. Josie Altidor, Matt Beisler, Michael Bradley, John Brooks, and Jeff Cameron are those guys. If they get a yellow card in this match against Trinidad and Tobago, they'll be suspended against Mexico. Those are some big guns. Those are some starters. Those are some guys you can't afford to lose.
I wouldn't hate if a bunch of them got those yellow cards and then had to miss Mexico and then could reset for the final four games of the hexagonal, which are the U.S. has the friendliest schedule of any team in the hexagonal over the final four games. We host Costa Rica and Panama. We're on the road at Honduras and Trinidad and Tobago. So I would like – I'm kind of writing off the Mexico game, and I want to go into those four games with our group able to play without worry of being suspended for what could end up being a must-win game.
Doyle's writing off the Mexico game. We're not writing off the rivalry, though. Remember, go check out that special Omar Gonzalez, Hercules Gomez, Moises Munoz, Charlie Davies, those fan perspectives. I mean, had a blast putting this thing together, having some really fun conversations with them about the social side of the rivalry, the competitive side of the rivalry, the past, present, and future of U.S.-Mexico, which I'll put up there against any rivalry in the world. Trinidad and Tobago comes up first, of course. As I said, you can watch that game on Thursday night at 8 p.m. It's going to be on FS1, Unimas, and UDN. In just one second, we'll talk to Lasana Liebird. He is a columnist at Wired 868, an expert on TNT. He knows him back to front. We'll get some of the details. Things are a little bit strange in camp, and we mentioned that new coach, Dennis Lawrence. Stephen Hart was in charge before, and he was suspending people and fining people out the wazoo. There were some stories going around, guys partying before games, doing some strange things, a lot of them stars in MLS. On this current roster for the Soca Warriors out of MLS, you've got Kenwin Jones, you've got Jovan Jones, you've got Michael Williams, you've got Kevin Molino, guys with MLS experience, and Kevon George, Daniel Cyrus, Aubrey David, who had a cup of coffee with FC Dallas. This team has had a tough go of it to start. Three losses and a win. They started with a loss at home against Costa Rica. They lost in Honduras. Then they won at home against Panama, then lost 1-0 to Mexico. We're a little unlucky in that game because it seemed Jovan Jones had a goal. It was disallowed for offside. Didn't appear to be offside. The expectation, I think, is that this team is going to bunker and likely look to counter through Kevin Molino and Jovan Jones, and then Kenwin Jones would be the point of the spear, so to speak, if they can whip in some service from set pieces and maybe catch the U.S. napping, which has happened from dead balls here recently. Dave, you look at this team. This is, in large part for them, despite that it's on the road, close to a must-win, if not a must-win. They've got two straight road games in this set of matches at U.S., at Costa Rica. If they lose both of those, they're going to be sitting down at the bottom, which they already are, and they're going to have a tough time recovering.
Yeah, they're going to lose touching distance with the teams ahead of them, and it's unreasonable, I think, for them to look at 1 and 2, but the U.S. spot in 4 is probably an ideal goal for what they have to do still, and they have an opportunity in the second half of their stretch. They've had some home games, but they've had the tougher home games. So far, they still have Honduras at home, which is a more winnable game for them. And as we said, they got the victory against Panama. It's been chaotic over the last year in their camp. They actually had two good Gold Cups, I thought, over the last two tournaments with what felt like younger teams trying to rebuild, because they made the 2006 World Cup, but that was at the very end of that golden generation. A lot of those guys, Lapidi and York and all those guys, Edwards, they were in 34, 35, 36, and they've had to try and rebuild that team, and it's probably not going as quickly as fans would have liked. And when you say those MLS names, it's not just because we're an MLS podcast. That's the heart of the team right now, is guys that play in Major League Soccer, and some of the talent's not good enough. Michael Williams is a serviceable player. That's not a guy that should scare you on a national team, and that's why if you're a U.S. fan, you can be confident.
Look, if Trinidad can win this game, and they got a draw 29 years ago, I think it was, and a win would, I mean, that'd be like a three-day party, I feel like, leading up to that match against Costa Rica and San Jose. I mean, if they could win this game, it would breathe much-needed life into the program. They do that. They're at 6 points. The U.S. is then sitting at 4 going to Azteca and are in real big trouble. So this is a massive match. Lasana Liebird is on the line now. He's a journalist down there, works for Wired 868. You can follow him on Twitter, at Lasana Liebird, L-I-B-U-R-D. Lasana, how's it going?
I'm all right. Hi, guys.
Hi, how's it going? So let's jump right into it. And the first question I have for you is one that's been burning on my mind for months now. Cordell Cato sent home after reportedly a disagreement about his wife and child staying with him. This is just kind of the latest in what has been some issues with Jovan Jones and Michael Williams and Kevin Molino. Can you tell us what's going on? What happened with Cordell? And is there an issue with discipline right now with the Soca Warriors?
Yes, the issue with Cordell, really, I think it's unprecedented. I've never heard of it before, you know, where a player shows up at a camp and insists that he spends the night with his wife. Word is, it was his anniversary. I think most people definitely don't agree with his position anyway. But essentially, he walked out of the camp because he wasn't allowed to spend that night with his family. in terms of what it points to with regards to the team behavior, it's left a lot of us wondering how seriously these guys actually want to get to the World Cup and how much of their heart is in it. In terms of Kevin Molino, who's a very, very important player for Trinidad, he was fined for going on a boat ride party 3 days before a World Cup qualifier. And then the very next time he showed up for international duty, he did the same thing. He went to another party. At that time, he was banned for a few games, and he actually did not play when Trinidad and Tobago lost 4-0 to the United States. And, you know, Jovan and Mikel were both involved in his first boat ride affair, so they were both fined. And, you do question, you know, the mentality and the maturity of some of these players, you know, with issues like that.
Off the field issues are one thing. Of course, on the field, things not necessarily going as you might want them. 3 points from 4 games, 3 losses to Costa Rica, Honduras, and Mexico, and then a win at home against Panama. How are things going on the field? What are the expectations for this round of games? What should we be looking for?
Sure, that always. We always expected that it'll be a rough tournament for us. At home here, we do not think this is one of our more talented national teams in recent years. If we go back to Dwight York and Russell Lafferty and Shaq Essop and so on, and this team really doesn't come close to that. But they put together a good run of games earlier on. We did okay in the Gold Cup. We got to 2 straight quarterfinal matches. And the team's strength really lay in a kind of compact, rugged, athletic team, you know, that could make a set piece to Kenwyn Jones or attack on the counter to Jovan. You know, not many strengths. We don't play expansive football or anything like that, right? The disciplinary problems really ate at the team because, you know, this is a team that's all about spirit and togetherness. And when that started to go, you know, Stephen Hart had a lot of problems. He was eventually replaced. You know, we have a new boss in right now. But, you know, unless we get that sort of togetherness, you know, this team really doesn't have any chance because we're just not as talented as we used to be. And we can't look at the other teams in the hex and say that, you know, we're better than this nation or that nation. We have to fight for every point.
The new manager you mentioned, Dennis Lawrence, Trinidad and Tobago legend, 90 caps, played with that golden generation with Dwight York in that 06 World Cup. What's the image of him in the country? What's the thought of him taking over?
I think there was definitely goodwill to Dennis Lawrence. He's well-respected here. He's always been, you know, a guy who's never made the headlines for the wrong reasons, even as a player. And, you know, with his experience with Roberto Martinez, at Wigan and at Everton and so on, they believe he has the top flight experience that could also help us. Otherwise, to be honest, our last home games neither came close to sellout, and the Hazy Crawford Stadium holds just 24,000, and in fact the attendances have dropped since under Stephen Hart, when we were getting between, you know, 20 to 22,000 people for our last, you know, a couple of home matches under him. So I think, you know, we are just a bit deflated. The change in coach, the bad results at the start and everything else. But, I mean, I suppose it could all change if the team shows some heart away now to our two of our toughest away games.
3 points would be massive. It could jump Trinidad Tobago over the likes of Honduras, the U.S., Panama, get them close to Costa Rica, perhaps, depending on how results go. You'll be at Costa Rica in the second match here in this international window. Away games, Dennis Lawrence hasn't had one yet. It's been home to Panama, home to Mexico. What's the sort of tactical outlook that you expect?
This is the interesting thing. Now, Trinidad, we have never gotten a win in the United States or Costa Rica. You have to go back 27 years for our last point in the U.S., and you have to go another 4 years, 31 years, since you got a point in San Jose. You know, I think the toe-to-toe talk seems a little bit naive, and to be honest, the Roberto Martinez team, always very good to look at, but he also faced the same criticism in the EPL, you know, in terms of being a little bit naive in the way he went about his job. And I hope that we are pragmatic enough to look at the weapons that the United States has. I mean, without Cordell Cato, without Levi Garcia especially, you know, we are even shorter on things that we could disturb the U.S. team with, you know. I mean, I think we need to be practical, but in terms of what Dennis does, he's a young coach. It's his first away game, and we just have to look on and hope for the best. I hope he comes up with something that works.
You mentioned the talent a little bit thin right now. This is a young team that, as you said, went to two quarterfinals in the Gold Cup. It looked like maybe they were moving in the right direction. What's the thought of where the sport stands right now? Is it just a little blip, or is there a worry about talent production in the country?
I think there's definitely a problem, a concern about, you know, the development of talent and everything else. You know, the national youth teams, there's the same exposure and the same care to developing players as they would have been before. An example of that would be that Dwight York, at the age of 15 or 16 to Trinidad, and he'd have already had maybe 20 to 30 caps for the national youth teams, and he'd have traveled to Venezuela and to Mexico and different places. And young nationals right now just don't get it. And we have players here who are probably just as talented, you know, but they're 17 years old and they aren't any stamps on their passport, and they aren't, you know, they aren't getting about there and testing themselves essentially. You know, right now our best players play in the MLS, you know, which is fine. But two decades ago, Russell Lafferty was wearing the number 10 shirt at Porto, and Dwight York was at Manchester United winning the Champions League. You know, we do have to get back to what worked for us before. We hope that does happen. I can't say that we have turned the corner on that just yet, and you know, that makes it a little bit bleak for us in the future in terms of that.
Where does Major League Soccer,
in the near future.
Where does Major League Soccer stand in that development, though? You mentioned the amount of players playing here. We've seen, of course, Stern John, other great Trinidad players come through. Where does the league stand in the minds of people in Trinidad and in the development of players?
The Pro League right now in Trinidad is very difficult for a player to earn a good living for himself. You know, most national players in the Pro League would get between 1,000 to 2,000 US a month, right? And obviously, it's not a great wage. It's much easier for the players as well to go to a country where the culture isn't that different from theirs, the language is similar. And that makes the United States a very attractive option for local players. You know, so it's really great that Jovin and Molino and so on are doing well there. And for sure, it could help us, especially when it's more difficult now to get players into Britain, which has always been our first choice, really. But it's more difficult because of the changes in work permit regulations and then really Premiership being awash with cash, to be honest. And there isn't much opportunity for a guy like 18-year-old Dwight York to end up at Aston Villa. And it's a lot more difficult for us now to get in there. So definitely, I think our future is kind of tied to the MLS in that sense. And hopefully we can do well for teams in the MLS as well. And it's a good relationship for us both.
Kevin Molino's become a big-time player here in MLS. What does he mean right now for the national team? What's the view of him around the country for fans?
Molino is a fan favorite. He's the type of player that Trinidad fans really want to. You know, he's tricky. He has a nice touch, and he gets on the end of things offensively. And those have always been the type of players that we really appreciate here. In terms of his commitment to the team, there have been questions about that. And really, the relationship does go both ways, because some of the problem really stems from the Football Association here not taking care of players as well as they should, you know, and partly because of that, then some players, you know, in turn, don't give it their all, right? If we had to have any chance of getting close to the World Cup, I think that we definitely need Molino, you know, getting close to Kenwyn Jones and trying to benefit from all the attention and defenses tend to pay to Kenwyn. You know, I don't think we'll get close to the World Cup without Molino being on top of his game.
Kenwin Jones, of course, kind of the elder statement, it seems, for this team. Is he the leader on the field in the locker room? What role does he occupy? And is he really the path forward? I mean, that seems to be where the goals will come from, or at very least the distraction to allow guys like Jovan or Kevin to get in there and score.
Kenwin is absolutely a polarizing figure in Trinidad. I think a lot of it is his fault. You know, again, when you look at the type of players that Trinidad fans go for, and I'll give you some examples of that. And Kenwin Jones is a forward, really just he isn't the cup of tea of many football fans who prefer nippier, trickier players, essentially. And there's always been concern that he just doesn't work hard enough up front. I think a lot of it is unwarranted, really. I think Kenwin in the dressing room has been very good for Trinidad. He has a very good record in terms of discipline and maturity as a player. I do feel sometimes, though, that the stick he gets from Trinidad fans and he gets his share sort of weakens his authority in the dressing room a bit, if you understand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because then it becomes difficult for him to come down on the Molinos and the Jovins and demand more from them. You know, when they're saying that, you know, the fans don't listen to you and the people don't really respect you. So, you know, why should we listen to you? You know, so I think there is a bit of tension, unfortunately, with Kenwin. You know, I do hope he gets a goal in. He hasn't scored one for Trinidad in a while, and he desperately needs it.
8 p.m. Eastern against the United States. FS1, Unimas, and UDN. This one's going to go down in Commerce City, Colorado, the site of the snow game. You'll remember that from a few years back, U.S. fans. Before we let you go here, Lasana, give us the prediction on your side. What are your expectations for the game? What do you think the result will be?
Well, like I said, not knowing what Dennis is up to makes it really difficult to tell. To be honest, all I could hope for is a draw. I think that with the United States playing Mexico so soon, I think the game, you know, could be decided upon in the first half. I think Bruce Arena would have to try to win the game in the first 45 minutes. He probably want to rest a couple of his elder players like them in the second half. So if Trinidad could be really stubborn in that first 45 minutes, I think they have a chance for a draw.
There you have it. Lasana Liebert, he's the guy you want to follow if you're interested in the Soca Warriors and soccer in Trinidad and Tobago. Writes for Wired 868. You can follow him on Twitter, Lasana Liebert, LIBURD. Lasana, thanks for your time, man. We really appreciate your insight.
No problem. Glad to talk. Take care, guys.
Big thanks to Lasana Liebert for giving us some much-needed insight on the Soca Warriors. Like I said, it's kind of been bizarre. For the last year and a half, 2 years here, coaching changes, a lot of suspensions, a lot of fines. He mentioned a lot of that going down here. No Cordell Cato now for the Soca Warriors for this big match, and he was an important piece of this puzzle if they were going to go get a result. It just seems weird. It seems like Cordell was trying to stretch the rules a little bit, and so much at stake. I guess you're drawing a line in the sand, and you're saying, look, these disciplinary issues, they've got to stop. If these are the rules, you follow them, but that's still a tough decision to make for a guy who's coming into his first away game in Dennis Lawrence.
Yeah, but I think he sees the issues they've had in the last few coaches you mentioned before we got into it with him, and it's been chaos. So you have to do that, and you have to have, you know, a strong line with everyone, as Lasana was talking about with Kenwin Jones and maybe preferential treatment. Cato's been good for this team, and he plays in a more offensive position than he does for San Jose, and I think he's been fun to watch, especially in the last Gold Cup. But you can't have anyone trying that. That's ridiculous. You can't just show up and then decide, well, no, then I'll just go home and come back tomorrow. Like, this is a World Cup. You don't have much time with these teams. You take over in January, similar to what we saw with Bruce, and you don't have a lot of opportunity to waste. You got to get a team going. This is Dennis Lawrence's first coaching opportunity as the head coach. So, yeah, you don't waste time with a situation like that.
Just to clarify, first opportunity away from home. He did coach in these last two matches, the win against Panama and the loss against Mexico. He has said that maybe this is bluster, Doyle, that he wants to go toe-to-toe with the U.S. on American soil at altitude in Commerce City. That's unlikely to happen, if I had to take a guess. I would imagine that they will look for set pieces, try to hit on the counter, look for a little bit of magic from Jovan or maybe Kevin Molino. Hot boy.
Yeah, I think Dennis Lawrence has been through World Cup qualifying in CONCACAF three times. He played 90 games for Trinidad and Tobago. He started, I think, every game at the World Cup for them in 2006. He knows exactly how to play in these games. He's done it himself, and I'm sure he'll coach them to be a back foot team to try to absorb a ton of pressure. And then, like you said, hit opportunistically on the break or on set pieces, which is what they did against Mexico. In that first half against Mexico, they really, really gave that team some trouble, and I think they were a little hard done in that 1-0 loss. I think that should have been at least a point for them.
Remember, 8 p.m. Eastern, United States, Trinidad and Tobago, a must-win game for the Americans. You can watch on FS1, Unimas, or UDN. You can follow along live if you want to on the MLS app. Go download that thing. It's absolutely free. It's an invaluable resource for anybody out there that likes CONCACAF, MLS, or just soccer in general. And if you're listening to this podcast, I'm pretty much assuming that you enjoy all three. Also, U.S.-Mexico special. I'll repeat it for you. It's that good. Omar Gonzalez on being kind of stuck between cultures and stuck between leagues now and countries. Hurt Gomez has perspective on that. So does Moises Munoz, who grew up in the U.S. and is now playing in Mexico, played for El Tri in some of these big games. Charlie Davies talking about that 2009 game. And then some fans who've been telling you why you should put it on your bucket list. We're going to go to the break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Daniel Squizzato about Alfonso Davies, who has committed to Canada.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
They say that I reign too long, forgetting that my constitution is strong.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, Andrew Reby, David Goss, and Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle, talking Canadian 40-man roster for the Gold Cup, the provisional squad right now. Alfonso Davies is on it, the 16-year-old from the Vancouver Whitecaps. That is a big question answered for Canadian national team fans. Daniel Squizzato will join us in just a little bit to give us some perspective on that. But first, Doyle, are you crying? Are you in mourning? Are you just in a dark room somewhere? Jay Chapman is not on this list, man.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I don't know what Octavio Zambrano is seeing there. I think it's a terrible decision, but considering that they also have Anthony Jackson-Hamel listed as a midfielder, maybe they just don't know what they're doing yet. But leaving Chapman off this list is ridiculous from Canada.
A whole lot of midfielders in the running here. You can go check out the full 40-man provisional rosters, preliminary rosters, I should say, at MLSsoccer.com. We've got them for every single nation in the Gold Cup. Let's talk about the news, man. Alfonso Davies, release coming down yesterday. He's decided to represent Canada. That's because he got his Canadian citizenship, and he's all in, it seems like. All the quotes from him and his family revolving around basically finding a home, finding a place for themselves, and wanting to represent it in the best light. He is just 16. We have been running hype trains, at all hours. You know, the trains are running on time here because we're that excited about Alfonso Davies and as our Canadian national team fans. Doyle, what does this decision mean for Canada? How do we make sure we don't put too much pressure on what is still a very young man?
Yeah, he's just 16, so it shouldn't mean a ton right now. I expect we'll see him a little bit in the, in friendlies this summer and then in the Gold Cup, but he's not going to save Canadian soccer overnight. I'm not sure that Canadian soccer needs saving in that way. It needs stability, it needs structure, it needs the ability to produce guys like Davies or like Kyle Larin in more volume. That's how you build a program. It's definitely evidence that something is going right. The fact that they've actually won a recruiting battle again for a dual national, which is something that they notoriously lost all the time a decade ago, indicates that something is going right as well. I think Canada is on the upswing. I'm not sure the results will show it right away, but I think the next 5 years, you're going to start to see a different type of Canadian national team. Davies should end up being a big part of that.
Let's talk to a guy who has a lot at stake here. That's Daniel Squizzato. He covers the Canadian national team. He's also a fan. I think he'll admit that. Daniel, how's it going, man?
It's going pretty well. I'm still recovering from the bump I've got on my head from hitting the ceiling at at the news earlier this week concerning a new Canadian national team member. So other than that, though, I'm doing quite well.
Yeah, man, I assumed that you had fainted. As soon as the email came through and I saw the photo of Alphonso Davies standing there with the red, the Canadian red jersey with the crest, with everything, smiling, citizenship, now called up to the Gold Cup. This is an emotional moment for Canadian soccer fans, am I right?
Well, it absolutely is. I think that, you know, over the years, Canadian fans have built up this expectation that when young players come up, young players with multiple national allegiances, you know, the assumption is that, oh, they're going to test the waters, they're going to maybe play for the other nation that they're eligible for, that they'll hold out for a long time. But Davies is different in the sense the kid is 16, and everything that he's done, everything he said, you know, he's smiling in the photo, the quotes he says about how proud he is to get his Canadian citizenship. This is obviously a kid that is all in for playing for this nation, you know, and he could be out there in the friendly next week, and he could be out there during the Gold Cup this summer. And so I think, you know, some of us, there were some whispers that this process could actually take quite a bit longer for various reasons. So to have this news come out today right before the Gold Cup is just great news for those who follow Canadian soccer.
And you mentioned some of those quotes in the release. His mother and father are also quoted, and you know, it really warms your heart. And forget the soccer part, the humanity aspect of this, for them to go through tough times and find a home, find a place where they belong and they can build a life for themselves and their children is inspiring. What do you think of that side of things as it pertains to Canada, the country, and how do you think he will be, let's say, embraced by the supporters and by the people of the country who are now his countrymen?
Well, obviously I'll be walking some socio-political tightropes as I answer your question, and I'll attempt to be as diplomatic as possible, but what I will say is that you're right. There obviously is quite an emotional human element to this. I mean, anytime you see a person or a family move from a situation of difficulty to a situation of hope, make the most of that and build a new life, I think that it's definitely something that is almost always very inspiring. I mean, in this particular case, I think that fans in Vancouver are already very well aware of what Alphonso Davies is capable of. I think that they'll be quite excited to see what he'll bring to the national team. I think fans in Toronto and Montreal as well, having seen Davies play in the Canadian Championship over the last 2 years, as well as in MLS play, I think that the reality of our national team is quite like the reality of the country, in that it is this wide array of people who come from all these different places, come from all these different situations, and they come together for whatever this shared ideal of Canada is. And, you know, we just mentioned some of the quotes from Davies and his family. I mean, it seems that he's bought in not just on the soccer level, but on the nationality and the human level. And I think that, you know, just as one of his fellow Canadians, that's always a good thing to see. And as one of his fellow Canadians who also follows the national soccer team, it's especially good to see when someone follows that path and also has what looks to be a very good degree of soccer talent as well.
That's the big part here for the national team, at least. The soccer talent is there, and he's just 16 years old, and the Vancouver Whitecaps have certainly taken a kid's glove approach with him, both with the media and also pushing him too soon into the first team and into a starring role, but the talent is there for all to see. How much can this kid right now affect the first team for Canada, and what sort of plan needs to be in place to make sure his development goes at the right pace?
I think it's going to be really interesting to see what they do at the national team level, specifically because we are right at the moment where a new national team manager is coming on board. Octavio Zambrano was named the new head coach a few months ago, but next week's friendly against Curaçao will be his first game in charge. This will be his first Gold Cup in charge. And so we're not totally sure yet what to expect from him. We know it'll be a bit of a departure from Benito Floro, the previous head coach, who was known and you know, criticized in some circles for a very defense-heavy approach. Zambrano, on the other hand, has spoken about his desire to bring that attacking flair to this Canadian team. In order to do that, of course, you need players who have those capabilities. And the reality is that when it comes to something seemingly simple, like going and taking defenders on one-on-one and having that nose to the net, there aren't very many players that tend to come up through the Canadian system or in Canada with those skills. You look at a kid like Davies, and that's one of the first things that pops off, pops off the page. If he was playing on a page, he doesn't. He plays on a soccer field. Pops off the field, we'll say, when it comes to a kid like him. So, yeah, obviously there is the reality that you don't want to put a 16-year-old in a situation where it's too much too soon at either the club or national team level. At the same time, at the national team level, they meet so infrequently, and the games thus have such large importance, be it the Gold Cup or World Cup qualifying when it comes around, that I have the feeling that if Davies is looking like he can contribute at a certain time, even as early as this Gold Cup, and Zambrano sees him as a fit for the system, we could see him out there as soon as this Gold Cup, which would really be remarkable if you consider how far he's come in just a few years.
We've got to talk about the history here before I let you go, Daniel. I mean, Canada and dual nationals, it's a mix that hasn't always been a positive one for Canadian national team fans. Blue Tabla is still a name that we're looking at, watching, waiting, seeing what he will decide. Do you think that this could be a harbinger of things to come if Alphonso Davies comes into the team and is successful and makes the moves perhaps that we think he will as his career progresses? Could this be a big moment for Canadian soccer at large?
I think it absolutely could because of what we're seeing in terms of Davies' long-term potential here. I think, though, that what's actually good and what's most encouraging is that Davies is not the one setting up the beachhead in this case. Davies is not the first one to make that turn. There have been, in the last several years, quite a number of players who, as you mentioned, have those dual nationalities and have made the decision to join the Canadian team. I mean, the one that may have tipped the scales actually a few years ago was Tesho Akindele, who was called into a U.S. camp, but then actually decided he was going to stick with Canada, the country of his birth. Since then, you've seen guys like Junior Hoilett and Scott Arfield, Wandy Lefebvre with Montreal, Jason Lutweiler, a goalkeeper with Swiss nationality, Steven Vittoria, just on and on, a number of different players who've made that decision to join the Canadian setup. And yeah, it could very easily be said that for some of those guys, it's a bit cynical. You know, it's a matter of, well, I tried to make it somewhere else and couldn't, so I'm going to go with Canada. You know, everyone's got their own motivations. Everyone's got their own story. What I think does set Davies apart a little bit is kind of what we talked about earlier, which is that when it's these young kids coming up, you know, we always, as Canadian followers, do assume, like, oh, they're going to test the waters, they're going to hold out, they're not going to go all in for Canada right away. And this is a kid, Alphonso Davies, who has gone in all the way in right from the start. And I think that other players looking at that are going to see that. And if Davies and these other players have the impact that we hope that they will have, they're going to see not just the human side of Davies' story, but they're going to see the end result. They're going to see a team that is starting to have more and more success. I'm attaching an asterisk to all of this, of course, being if it happens. But yeah, I think that in that respect, Davies, along with some of these other players that have come on board, it really is, I think, hopefully a harbinger of what the future will hold. Obviously, Canada will still have players who choose other nations. That's the reality of international soccer in the year 2017, especially for teams like Canada, like the United States, where there are going to be a lot of players, probably all the players or most of them, with multiple potential allegiances. But, you know, nowadays for Canada, it's you win some, you lose some, whereas in previous years, it was only you lose some. So if nothing else, that is definitely a good sign of the times for the Canadian team.
Good times right now for Canadian men's national team fans. Alphonso Davies, a citizen committing his future to the national team. Daniel Squizzato, follow him for all the news on the Canadian national team and soccer in Canada, at Daniel Squizzato on Twitter. Daniel, thanks for joining us, man.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Big thanks to Daniel for joining us here. You can follow him on Twitter, at Daniel Squizzato, and watch his coverage all over the place, including at MLSsoccer.com. Remember, for the latest news, highlights, stats, scores, whatever you want. The MLS app is the place to get it. Go download that thing. It's absolutely free. Also, if you have anything to get off your chest, the Hot Take Hotline is open at all times. 401-206-0MLS. If you need to remember it, 401-206-0MLS. There are three games this weekend, guys, and if you haven't got your MLS fantasy team in, go do that right now. You don't have a ton of players to choose from, but unlimited transfers will help you out there. On Saturday, Chicago-Atlanta, Sporting KC Montreal, and Portland FC Dallas. A lot of these teams missing internationals. Kind of a weird weekend, Doyle, but these are still points on the table. This is a chance to climb for a lot of teams.
Yeah, the home teams have the most to lose here. Chicago playing against a conference foe in Atlanta and doing so without Dax McCarty in central midfield and David Akam is with Ghana. Portland missing Nagby and David Guzman, Aldis Powell as well. So these are it's one of the realities of the MLS schedule. It's something that the teams in the league are still working through. These games during international dates, they're tough. And I don't think anybody loves to play him, but you got to go out there if you're a home team and you got to get the result.
Pretty sure Atlanta will be missing Almiron.
Yep.
As well as Kenwyn
Jones. Obviously, Sporting KC, you're looking at like Roger Espinoza, Beasler, Zusi. They've got a number
it's
of.
Fine. You had me at Roger Espinoza.
Yeah. Okay. Missing places there as well.
As most of the KC people in this office will just call him Roger.
Or Raj. No, nobody says Raj. Just Roger. Three big games.
It's like
go check those out.
Sometimes.
Yeah. That's a little bit of a snack in between hexagonal games. As I said, United States, Trinidad and Tobago, 8 p.m. Eastern on Thursday. FS1, Unimas, and UDN. And then on Sunday, at Azteca, the Clasico, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. FS1, Univision, UDN, Mexico. The United States. Go listen to our special on U.S.-Mexico. It is awesome, and I am extremely biased, but I think that will be proven true. We're going to go to break. We come back right into the Hot Take Hotline.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
You've been scared of love and what it did to you. You don't have to run. I know what you
back now on Extra Time Radio. Andrew Reeby, David Goss in the green room out in the octagon. Matt, the armchair analyst. Doyle, remember, Trinidad and Tobago on Thursday night, the U.S. taking them on in Commerce City, Colorado, a big must-win game in the Hex. 8 p.m. Eastern, FS1, Univision, and Univision Deportes. You can also catch our U.S.-Mexico special, which is probably out right now. So hit play. We've got interviews with Omar Gonzalez, Hercules Gomez, Moises Munoz, Charlie Davies, and Brent Gamet, a fan who has been to the last three and will go this time as well. So he'll tell you why you should have it on your bucket list. Go listen to that one. In the meantime, Doyle is spraying his cat with a water bottle or something. Taquito is coming for blood.
Yeah, he's up for the game, man. He's tough to control in these types of situations. He needs a little more tactical discipline while I'm recording this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So
needs to have it. He's running all over the place. He is. I'm just going to stop right there before I put your names on that one. I'll just hold off. Dave, do we have anything in the mailbag that's interesting?
I believe we may.
This is Council Dude from Chicago and Salt Lake. I got a question for ETR. What is the Gold Cup? I mean, does it count besides every 4 years when it sends a team to the Confederations Cup, which is another tournament of dubious standing? I mean, I used to like this tournament a little bit. I used to be, you know, kind of excited about seeing our Nats go into action, but how am I supposed to react as an MLS fan whose team always loses its best players for this tryout tourney, for this training camp? What is it? I mean, MLS is a summer league.
Yeah, look, it can be tough for MLS fans. I won't deny that. There's no doubt that sometimes the schedule gets a little bit wonky with these things. But remember, this year there is a big break. The teams will be off for basically almost 2 weeks. Things get going back again on the MLS side on July 19th, and the tournament starts in the early part of the month. So there is a break there, but yeah, look, there is a little bit of overlap, and that can be tough sometimes for MLS teams, as well as the national teams who are looking for the right balance with their guys. But I think what it is remains pretty clear, and despite the fact that this is, I think we would call kind of a B Gold Cup, it's an opportunity to establish yourself as dominant in CONCACAF, and what you have to remember, if you're out there listening, you're probably a U.S. fan or maybe a Canada fan, maybe a Mexico fan's out there as well. I mean, who knows? We could have
potentially
a Jamaica,
Costa Rica.
We could have the whole gamut. We might have that. I hope we have that. It's not just about the U.S. It's not just about Mexico. It's opportunities for some of these other countries that don't get meaningful tournaments or meaningful games very often to come out and try to slay the big boys, to try to establish themselves, to try to push their programs forward. Oh, and by the way, to get a little bit of funding because CONCACAF makes so much money off this tournament that then gets trickled down to all the member nations. So there are a lot of different reasons for it. I continue to really enjoy the tournament. I like seeing some of the minnows come in and try to slay dragons. I liked seeing Jamaica make a run at this past Gold Cup tournament. I mean, that was a blast to be a part of. Talking to those guys, being around those guys, it was a great story. And, there were other stories in that tournament that were extremely interesting as well. Some of them not all positive when you're talking about some of the incidents. I'll think specifically to Panama and Mexico, which I was there for in Atlanta, which went off the rails. But it is compelling, and I remain a believer in the Gold Cup, and I think 2 years is the right thing for CONCACAF.
I mean, to me, it does come down to, do we want to see CONCACAF U17 tournaments for both the men's and the women's side? Do we want to see U20s? Do we want to see teams like Honduras or Panama or Jamaica improve? The Gold Cup funds all of that. A little anecdote, one of the first things I did when I got hired by MLS Soccer, I had to interview Chuck Blazer, of all people, back before Chuck Blazer left his position.
Bring a spray bottle of that interview as well? Or
I did not, though he had some great cats, from what I understand. It was in a scrum, and Chuck Blazer was asked that very question, and he came off as very sincere and very honest in explaining what this tournament means for the entire region financially. And I've seen nothing to think that he was lying about that particular thing. I understand why MLS fans get upset, and it's not ideal, but the Gold Cup isn't going to go away. I'm not going to stop hosting it every 2 years anytime soon.
I'll just say that I already bought my tickets before the draw even came out, and I'm going to see Honduras, Costa Rica, and French Guyana, Canada doubleheader at Red Bull Arena. And I genuinely...
I'm pretty sure, did Florent Malouda, isn't he on that 40-man roster for French Guyana?
They have a few interesting names. I don't know that I saw Malouda's name.
I saw a Malouda. Maybe it was the wrong Malouda.
I tell you, though, that I'm psyched. And I went to a doubleheader at Red Bull Arena last time around that I think was Trinidad, Haiti, El Salvador, and Honduras.
And the crowds,
and it was
at
like
these,
the best soccer day of my life in the U.S.
Yeah,
like,
the crowds at these gets jacked up because they don't have a ton of opportunities sometimes to see their team. You know, the Haitians here in New York are coming out in force, and they have these all in places generally, geographically, where you can have fans come support their team. And look, it's not just about the U.S. It's not just about MLS. It's not just about Mexico. It's not about Canada. It's about the whole lot. CONCACAF as a region. And it's very, very important. And I can still understand why some of you out there are a little bit, skeptical sometimes. And that's okay. We can all kind of sit in our own little zones. We can discuss and have fun with it. But it's coming, and I think it's going to be exciting. And not least because we're going to see a lot of those MLSers in action for the U.S. 32 of the 40 on that preliminary roster are out of MLS. Some tweets here I'm seeing as we're coming through, just kind of trickling down. This is an interesting one, I think, because it might like tie into a lot of people's experience. Brian tweets at us, guys, when I'm sitting at the bar with my friends watching these hexagonal games, what fun fact about our roster can I say to look smart but not too smart? I don't know what he's saying there about not too smart. I think he's trying to like imply that we might be nerds. And I will wholeheartedly accept that diagnosis. I'm going to throw out the Clint Dempsey being one goal away from Landon Donovan for all-time U.S. men's national team goal scoring. I think you can maybe like do a little quiz on that one. If he scores the goal, you're like, oh, who's the top scorer? And people are like, Landon Donovan, duh, and you can throw Clint Dempsey in there. Same thing with maybe most goals in World Cup qualifying. Dempsey's on the top of that list, and I think most people would assume that it would be Landon Donovan. So that's a good one to throw out there. Let's see.
If you want the too smart one, if Josie scores, then Josie ties Dempsey, I think, for top all-time World Cup qualifying goals.
Ooh, that might be a tad too smart.
Yeah, that's too smart. That's too smart. Yeah.
Let's see. I'm trying to think of other good ones here. Yeah, I'm going to say, like, which guys have been uncapped? And if that's too smart, because you're going to have to say Raimondo, Horvat, Hedges, and McCarty. I don't know. Doesn't have anything to do with anything. They're just random facts. I mean,
wait, uncapped? You just said Raimondo?
In World Cup qualifiers.
Oh, I was about to say, you just said Raimondo.
No, yeah, in Raimondo. In World Cup qualifiers.
Yeah, but not in...
Sure, but in World Cup qualifiers.
He has caps. Yeah.
Correct. Oh, guys, we're off the rails here. Yeah. Okay.
We are off the rails.
That's
all right,
exciting.
Before we get out of here... Anders Aarhus on Twitter wants to know who's the unexpected starter that we'd want to see in the starting 11 over both of these two games. So widen the scope. Who do you want to see get on the field and get a start that maybe odds tell you that's not going to happen?
This is
Matt Hedges. Oh. Matt Hedges in the Azteca. I don't want to see. I think John Brooks is going to start on Thursday night. I think he's going to do well. I don't want to see him out there on 72 hours of rest. I want to see Matt Hedges start in the Azteca, just throw him right into the fire. He played great against Pachuca down there, so we know he could do it at altitude. I think the guy's ready.
Got one? You were jumping in.
Dax McCarty. And I know it's surprising because everyone would think I'd say Kellen, but I thought Kellen looked off against Venezuela, and I think at some point you're going to need Doyle had talked about Bedoya. But I think you're going to need a more defensive-based central midfielder alongside Bradley, and I'd like to see Dax get that opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, I think you guys took the two good ones there. I'm looking through the rest of the roster. Viafania's got his spot. DeMarcus Beasley's done this like 5 million times before. You don't want to go with a goalkeeper on this side. I'm going to go with Hedges, though, just because I still remember interviewing him when he got drafted with FC Dallas, and he was so quiet and just kind of like ho-hum and like, you know what, I hope to make a career out of this, and look what he's doing now. So congratulations
also
to him.
To that Hedges one, Matt Beisler made his U.S. World Cup qualifying debut last time at the Azteca, and they got the 0-0 draw alongside Omar, who I think was like in his second or third cap ever after getting thrown in the fire in Honduras when they dropped Bocanegra all of a sudden right before the game. So maybe you're a little redux there with doing it with Hedges, or maybe just Beisler gets the start again.
Yeah, look, it's going to be a lot of fun. We always love these Hex weekends, match days. Trinidad and Tobago on Thursday, 8 p.m. On Sunday at 8:30, U.S.-Mexico from Azteca, both of them. FS1, Univision Deportes, all the coverage at MLSsoccer.com. And if you're out about or you're still at home in front of a computer, the MLS app is probably your best bet there. Remember, go check out our U.S.-Mexico special. Hercules Gomez, Omar Gonzalez, Moises Munoz, Charlie Davies, a fan perspective for you. It's a lot of fun. That's some good stuff. And by the way, the hot take hotline, it's always open. I expect you might have some hot takes this weekend. 401-206-0MLS. Big thanks to our guests, Daniel Squizzato and Lasana Liebird. That's it for us. We'll see you next week.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.